Welcome, Twim Nation. We are here today, the Twim Sisters, just for you. Tiffany Hales.
And Ariane Smith.
It's been a while since we've been here.
It feels like a really long time because it's been so busy.
I know.
But we survived Halloween, which I believe is an evil holiday for mothers everywhere. And now we are moving on to bigger and better things.
Okay, so explain why you're dissing on the Halloween.
Oh, I'm just like a well-known Halloween Scrooge. There's costumes, candy. It's a lot of work for a mom.
It is a lot of work for a mom. Not gonna disagree with you there. But yes, Halloween is in our hindsight now.
But I am all about Thanksgiving. So
I know Thanksgiving's one of your favorite holidays.
We are moving on.
And
this week we have lots of big events this week. First thing is you have a big birthday this week.
I do have a big birthday this week.
She's turning 50, people.
Oh, you say that out loud.
And I can't do math. I thought it was 49 until about a few weeks ago when you reminded me it was 50. I was like, oh.
Oh, I know. You said to me, you're like, oh, you're turning 49 this year. And I was like, I wish.
So, the big 5-0.
The big 5-0.
How are you feeling?
I have been in a funk about this. I have been in a serious, curled up in the fetal position, put the covers over my head funk about this, which you know because you and I have discussed this because yeah. It just seems really old. You know, I don't even know how to describe it. It just seems old to me for some reason, for a number of reasons. First of all, you know, the Twim Nation, we have a lot of millennial listeners in the Twim Nation. I'm sure you are just aghast at the fact I'm turning 50, Twim Nation, because yes, I could be probably the mother to half of Twim Nation. But, you know, that being said, it's just, the number was just kind of playing with my head.
Right. But you're so young. You're just very energetic and you have a young personality. You're not a grandma yet.
I'm not a grandma yet.
Like so many women your age.
Clearly I am not fulfilling my Mormon motherly mom duties because I have reached the milestone of 50 and have not one grandchild from my 6 children to show for it, which I'm actually glad because there's only one of my 6 children who would be old enough and mature enough to actually have a baby. If any of the other remaining 5 had babies, I would be mortified.
That would be bad.
But yes, so it's I've just been kind of dreading it. And even when we were talking last Thursday, I just kept looking at this week and I'm like, oh, this week we've got so much going on with the birthday and the temple dedication. I just want it to go away. And it just seemed kind of overwhelming to me. And I'm not really sure what happened on Saturday, but on Saturday, a switch just flipped.
Oh, it did? You had a breakthrough.
It did. I had a breakthrough. So I did a couple of different things, kind of pre-birthday celebration things over the weekend. First of all, I decided on Friday that I needed a new outfit for my birthday. Not that that is any surprise because I am a complete clothes horse. Mm-hmm. It's true. I might have a closet that has more square footage than my youngest child's bedroom. And I'm not ashamed of that. But in addition to being a clothes horse, I'm also a value shopper. I want to get a lot of bang for my buck.
Yes.
So I decided that that I needed a new dress for my birthday. So
we're good. That's fair.
I headed to my favorite old lady store, Old Navy.
And were you successful?
I was successful. And see, here is the beauty of Old Navy for me, because I am short. An Old Navy dress will come to my knees, as opposed to other individuals who may be slightly taller than me, that an Old Navy dress will not come to their knees. So I found myself a birthday outfit to wear. So this is good. I paid $15 for my dress, which was even better.
Nice.
And then I decided to treat myself to a little mini makeover of my home office.
Oh.
As a birthday present. Now, I had not really intended this to be a birthday present because about a week ago last Sunday, my 13-year-old son was sent into the office to retrieve paper for the printer. Uh-huh. I came out of the office with the paper, but also broke the filing cabinet that contained the paper. Ooh. As in, broke the drawer, wouldn't push in. It was a broken piece of furniture. Now, this piece of furniture had been around for, you know, a long time. It was 10 years old. It was an inexpensive piece of furniture to begin with anyway. But it kind of forced me to go, okay, we need to do some reorganization.
Right.
So this last weekend, I did a big purge of my office, got rid of a ton of stuff, got some new organization things in there. And I just... It allowed me to feel renewed.
Oh, nice. And you're ready to deal with life again.
I know. And when I felt renewed, I was like, I've got this. I've got this birthday thing.
Okay, good.
And so the switch has flipped. I'm good. And then in Relief Society yesterday, I got some of the best advice in Relief Society yesterday from one of the sisters in my ward. She said, just think of people you know that are older than you that just are still full of life, don't seem like they're their age. And she said, and this birthday will be not a big deal. And just in my mind, I could go through about five or six sisters in my ward that I aspire to be like, who are older than me, who are just the neatest ladies ever, that I say, I want to be you when I grow up. So now I don't feel old at all, and I'm ready to party.
Okay, that's good. I'm glad you're feeling better, because you need to party. This is big.
This is big.
And that is good advice. I'm going to remember that for... when I have a birthday crisis someday, which I'm sure I will.
I'm sure you will. Well, see, and that's the difference, is because our mom passed away when she was 46. Mm-hmm. So we don't really have like, I don't anyway have like an older woman to kind of look up to and say, this is how you navigate this.
This is how you age.
This is how you age. Because, you know, the only older women in my life were my grandmothers, and they were really old when I was born. At least it seemed that way to me.
Very true.
So I am trailblazing for you, my friend. Be grateful.
I appreciate that.
Okay. All right.
All right.
So enough about my birthday.
We've got to talk temple, because that's our other big thing this week.
Yes.
This coming Saturday is finally the dedication of the Meridian.
No, Sunday is the dedication.
Oh, Sunday, right.
Yes.
Saturday is the cultural celebration.
Saturday is the cultural celebration.
This weekend is the big event of the Meridian Idaho Temple, which we've been looking forward to. And
it has
been a lot.
I think last time we podcasted, they were just getting ready to begin the tours.
Right.
We had not done any tours yet. So we have had 3 weeks of tours at this point in time, and all sorts of temple madness / craziness for the last 4 weeks here in the Boise area.
I got to say, I really, going into this, had no idea what a production it was.
Yes.
I mean, I knew it was a big deal, but I've never lived anywhere where this has been... a new temple has been dedicated. Yeah. I just had no idea. There are so many moving pieces and parts. So many cooks in the kitchen.
Oh, geez.
Just, there's so much, so many details. I don't know how it's all happening.
Well, you know, I went to a fireside last night, because my husband and I are going to be volunteers in the temple. We're going to be in the laundry on Saturday night, folks. That's how we're going to spend our date night, fluff and fold at the Meridian Temple.
Nice.
Anyway, so we went to this fireside last night, and they were saying, just for the open house alone, they had 10,000 Latter-day Saint volunteers.
Wow.
Between tour guides, parking people, the people putting on, the kids putting on the shoe coverings, or as I like to call them, booties. But I was told that booties is not the appropriate term.
Oh, really?
They are to be referred to as shoe coverings.
Oh, they didn't tell me that.
Oh, yes. In fact, apparently during one of my tours, I kept referring to them as booties, and everybody on my tour was laughing.
I feel like everybody was calling them booties.
I called them.
I was doing tours.
I know. Anyway, apparently you are supposed to reference them as shoe coverings.
Okay.
Anyway, so 10,000 Latter-day Saints to put on that open house for the public.
Wow.
It was pretty amazing. Mm-hmm. They had, I think the numbers are slightly over 200,000 people that came through the temple and toured through the temple, which is just kind of mind blowing if you think about it.
Yeah, it is. I mean, 'cause how many people live here in the valley? What, like 500,000?
Yeah, I think it's probably about 500, 600,000 when you count the valley.
That's like half the valley.
It is.
Although we know a lot of people came from other places.
Exactly. Exactly.
We actually had our former bishop back in Oregon brought all of the youth from our town on it. They rented a big bus.
Really?
Yeah. They rented a bus, came over, spent the night, took all their youth through the temple, and then drove back to Portland.
Wow. So, well, you know, this is probably the closest temple open house for those kids that they've ever been close to.
Yeah, it is. So it's very cool. And we had a couple sets of friends from Portland come and stay with us and go through the open house. So it's fun.
There were a lot of people who came from out of town, you know, and it's interesting how they keep statistics on how many people are going through the temple. The last day that I did tour guiding, which was on November 4th, they had over 15,000 people through the temple that day. And that was a Saturday. And they were counting it based on the white booties.
The booties.
How many sets of white booties they went through. Because they only use those booties once. One and done.
Throw them away.
They throw them away.
I gotta say, I was wondering.
Yeah. Yeah. No, they were showing us pictures.
I don't like the idea of a used booty going on my foot.
I know. They were showing us pictures of the trash bags full of booties. And
so somebody counts?
Well, what they do is...
because they have boxes.
They have boxes and cases full of booties. So they keep track of how many cases full of booties they're using.
But that's interesting because when I was tour guiding, I saw clicker guys clicking. Like multiple clicker guys clicking. And I kept thinking, how are they not double clicking? Because there was one at the entrance to the chapel and there was another at the entrance to the temple. So maybe they were double checking each other and maybe crossing that with the booty numbers. Maybe they're just really getting some good data.
You know, I don't know. I did not see the clicker guys.
You didn't see any clickers?
I tour guided on two different Saturdays and I did not see clickers.
Oh, I saw multiple clickers. And I was wondering how you got the clicking job, but then I decided that would not be a good job. It would be really boring.
Yeah. Well, not only that, because you'd have to stand there all day, but what if you see a person and you get distracted and you go, did I click that person?
Right.
Should I click again? Should I not click?
They were holding a baby. I got to do two clicks.
Exactly. I'm thinking the booty count is a little more accurate.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that kind of makes the clickers...
Exactly.
Awesome.
Well, and they make like everybody put on the booties. So like even if a parent is holding a baby, if the baby looks like it's old enough, it could get down and walk. Booties on that kid.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know
that. There will be no street shoes in the temple.
Oh, okay.
So.
Oh, okay. We have to talk about kids in the temple.
Oh, my gosh.
Because we have stories.
We have stories. Yes,
we
do.
You had some rowdy kids on one of your tour groups. I had good kids on mine.
Now, last time we were here, you weren't going to be a tour guide.
Oh, right. I did get to be a tour guide.
So you better explain how you got to be a tour guide.
Last time we were here, I was not sure if we were down to one shift because we'd given away all of our shifts because they didn't work out with our schedules. And I thought they were going to cancel our last shift, but we did get to do it. So we got one shift being tour guides. It was great. It was a fun opportunity. It was kind of like organized madness.
That's the best way to describe it. Because you were there on a Saturday,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, we were there on a Saturday. And so it was, they told us on our day, you can say one sentence per room because we don't want to go down to a silent tour, but you must walk and talk. You cannot talk unless you're walking. We're walking and talking. So I was like, okay.
Well, and what's really interesting is we tour guided the first Saturday that it was open. And then we tour guided, I think, 2 weeks later, and the difference between the instructions they gave us on the first Saturday versus the second Saturday, they knew Saturdays were going to be very busy. And so the first Saturday, our instruction was silent tours. Don't say anything.
Right.
And there were some people who were really put off by that. People who came to see the temple. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, even though we said to them, you know, hey, when we get to the reception area, we will answer any questions that you have. We can talk in the reception area. We just can't stop the tour. In fact, they said, this is like a freeway, folks. If somebody stops, it backs up the whole thing and we got to be moving people through.
Yeah.
So, and I think they must have probably gotten a lot of negative feedback on that on the comment cards.
Oh.
Because by the time we got to Saturday number two, or by the time we got to the second Saturday, which was 2 weeks later that we were tour guiding, by then they said, oh, yeah, walk and talk tours. We need to say stuff. And so they were explaining to us the things that they wanted us to say. And they were trying to break the groups into smaller groups so that
So they could hear you.
So they could hear you. So my first small group the smaller groups were supposed to be between 10 and 15 people. Mm-hmm. My first small group contained about 45.
Oh, my.
So.
I think that's bigger than any group I had the whole time.
Exactly. And even with mm-hmm. two tour guides, it was only supposed to be like 30. But like you said, it was just kind of organized chaos. Yeah. And so they had a specific thing on the instruction card that said be flexible.
Right.
So you just had to kind of be flexible and go with it. But one thing that was really interesting that I noticed not only on the first Saturday, but the second Saturday is the little kids on the tours.
Yes.
Okay.
We took our small children and they did good.
Okay.
You know, we were, you never know.
You never know.
They are a wild card.
Well, one of my tour groups, they had decided to bring like their entire, there was many siblings and spouses right. and children. And the children outnumbered the adults about 4 to 1. And I don't think there was a kid over about 10. I think most kids were about 8 and under. So what would happen, and this happened in a couple of different tours. It was just kind of funny to watch. The adults would all be at the back, and right. the kids would all be up front with me. And every single room we went into, the kids inevitably circle, circle, circle around the room, running in circles around the room. And then they would be like, okay, we have to try out every chair. And they proceeded to attempt to try out every chair in the room.
Well, that's funny.
It was making some of the people who were standing in the room a little bit nervous. And I, of course, have no control over these children.
Right. You can't be a nasty tour guide.
I can't be a nasty tour guide
that
and
would be
yell at other people's kids.
Not a good experience.
And the Celestial Room was no exception.
Oh, that's funny. Okay, so we have to talk about throw up.
Ooh, yeah. Regurgitation in the temple.
We know of at least two incidences of throw up.
Yes.
I'm sure there's more. That's just between the two of us.
I know. Well, I will share mine and then I will let you share yours.
Okay.
Sorry, Twim Nation. This is probably TMI. Deal with it. So, again, the first day that I was tour guiding, you go into the temple and then you go down to the basement where the baptistry is and you wind through the basement till you get to a set of stairs and head back up. So as we are winding through the basement, shortly before we come to the stairs where we're supposed to head back up, there's all of a sudden there's rags and everything on the floor and we have to step over it because some little kid has lost his cookies in the basement of the temple. They ended up having to reroute the tour around the regurgitation.
Oh my goodness. Yes. Okay. So I have a friend who went through with her family on a tour and her niece or nephew, one of those, threw up in the Celestial Room chocolate granola bar on the white carpet.
The white sculpted carpet.
But I tell you what, they have like some amazing, powerful chemicals they use in that temple.
Well, she was telling us this story. So her brother's holding the kid. The kid throws up. The brother doesn't do anything. She comes along, realizes the kid is thrown up, and the brother's like, they got people for that. She's trying to find an usher going, we got a problem in here.
So that was before I had gone through with my family and before I was a tour guide. So I have to admit, every time I walked through the Celestial Room as a tour guide, I was checking out the carpet. And I could see nothing.
I know.
They are so good at cleaning those carpets.
They really do have an amazing ability to clean those carpets. But, you know, what's really interesting is on Saturday night, so the tour ended this last Saturday. And so both your husband and my husband got an assignment to go, and they had to move all of the furniture out of the rooms because they had to get the rooms cleaned. And of course, there were rumors that, they rip up the carpet and they put new carpet in.
I've always heard that they put new carpet in a temple, but it's clear to me they are not putting new carpet in our temple.
No. There was no new carpet going in. So I want to dispel that rumor right here and now. They do not put new carpet in the temple. They clean the very good, high-quality carpet that they already have installed, and I might add, expensive carpet in the temple. But my husband was telling me, he said, that temple's trashed, you know? And you think about it. You have 200,000 people coming through your house. You know, I saw people putting their fingers on the oil paintings.
Oh,
I saw that multiple times.
Oh, no.
Because the oil paintings are right at eye level.
They are, and they're huge.
And they're huge. Yeah. And so I saw people touching them. So you could just imagine just kind of how filthy it was. And that's even with the shoe coverings on.
Right.
And I asked Darren, I said, could you see traffic patterns? And he says, oh, yes, you could definitely see traffic sleep patterns. So they were removing all of the furniture to various other parts of the temple so that they could get people in there to get the carpets cleaned. They had a cleaning crew coming through for the walls. There were dings, I assume, like maybe where wheelchairs had hit. Right.
There were a lot of wheelchairs in and out. I'm sure the walls probably got dinged up.
So they wanted it to be pristine for the dedication.
And now they have 1 week to get it all fixed up.
Yeah, except you were telling me tonight that they were already putting chairs in for the dedication.
Yep.
So they must have had a fast cleaning crew.
They must have done something over the weekend because, tonight our ward had an assignment to go fill it with chairs.
Uh-huh.
Fill every nook and cranny with chairs for the dedication.
And didn't you say they were pulling them out of the building and kind of... they had a line where they were passing the chairs.
It's like a line. Pass the chair down the line is what I heard. So,
well, and see, this begs the question. Because if they are filling every nook and cranny of that temple with chairs, which that was my belief that they were going to do. Mm-hmm. And this is a huge temple.
Right.
I mean, you could put a lot of people in there for the dedication.
Yeah.
We have not heard anything in terms of how do you get into the temple for the dedication. You know, they have told us that to go to the stake center, and you know, our stake center will in essence be a version of the temple, so to speak.
Right.
But with that many people that they can hold in there, it's just been silent on, well, who actually gets to go into the temple? And they're doing three sessions.
I know.
So that's a lot of people.
Well, you just got to be, we're not high enough.
Apparently we're
gotta
not.
Got to be pretty high. I think there's just too much. There's so many levels of leadership here in the valley. There's probably no way, right?
Well, here's I don't know if this is true, but here's my beef if it is.
Uh-huh.
So we've got 16 stakes in our temple district. Okay, I totally get bishops, stake presidents, high counselors for all those 16 stakes.
Uh-huh.
So still, you divide that by three, and you're looking at, you know, five stakes a dedication.
Oh, you've been crunching the numbers.
I've been crunching the numbers. So you're looking at five stakes per dedication. And so, you know, let's assume, maybe 35 or 40 people, you know, I guess you got to include wives. So for argument's sake, 100 people per stake. So that's 500 people right there.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's a fraction of what that temple can hold.
Hmm.
So who's getting in? See, here's my beef. We've got a number of stakes around here that are not part of our temple district. Now, if those leadership people are getting tickets to the temple dedication to be actually in the temple, then I'm going to be a little miffed. Not your district, not your temple. Go to your district, go to your temple. Go to your stake center, and you can watch it at your stake center, but don't come to my temple.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just saying, if that is the truth, I'm going to be a little miffed. But in any event, I mean, we're just going to go watch it at our stake center,
right.
And I am perfectly happy to do that. But it does beg the question of, how do you get tickets to go in?
Yeah.
Okay.
The mystery. Nobody knows.
Yes. And then there were all sorts of interesting things we heard tour guides say.
Oh.
The two most interesting things we heard out of the mouths of tour guides that were not on the talking points card issued by the LDS Temple Department.
Ooh, what did you hear?
That one tour guide, my kid heard this one.
Uh-huh.
One of my daughters told somebody that the baptismal font is huge, especially compared to the baptismal font in Boise. It's probably like three or four times the size of the baptismal font in Boise.
Yeah.
A tour guide said, oh yes, they're going to baptize two people at a time.
What?
No, folks, I'm pretty sure they're not going to be baptizing two people at a time.
Oh, that was definitely not on the card they
gave
us.
And that was not on the talking point card. The other thing about the baptismal font that I heard that I thought was kind of funny was, of course, you know, when you have the oxen that support the baptismal font, apparently somebody asked the question, you know, why the oxen, and a tour guide said, well, they were good to the pioneers.
Oh my goodness. Did these tour guides skip their training?
I have no idea.
Because I sat through that training.
All I recall is the instruction.
That was not mentioned.
Stick to the card.
Right.
Stick to the card. This is what has been given by the temple department. Stick to the card.
Oh my goodness. Those are good ones. Okay. So going back to the font.
Yes.
I have like the craziest story. I told you this story. We have to tell people.
Okay. Well, and this goes into this falls under the category of faith promoting rumors, yes, surrounding the Mormon, the Meridian Temple.
Rumors.
Rumors,
where,
folks.
Where there are Mormons,
there are rumors. Gossip runneth amok. And it really is like the telephone game. The story gets bigger and better every single time.
It totally
so, yes, you okay. Share with Twim Nation the most outlandish rumor we have heard related to the Meridian Temple.
So I heard this. I've only heard this once. So I have not heard this coming from like multiple people. But we had some friends over for dinner, and they had heard this story, supposedly from somebody, of course, a friend.
A friend of a friend.
Of a friend who was, like, close, supposedly. Okay. Anyway, so these friends told us that the rumor going around, or the story that they heard about the baptismal font, was that the temple had hired a contractor to pour the concrete for this font.
Now, supposedly this was a local contractor,
yes,
right?
Supposedly a local contractor here to pour the concrete for the font. He was not a member. I guess the story goes, supposedly when they pour the concretes on these fonts, it takes several times.
Now, are we talking like oxen, pour part of the oxen, or just like the foundation for the font?
You know, I'm not sure.
Okay.
Nobody knew those details.
Okay. Okay. So, we're just curious.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm assuming oxen and foundation. Who knows? Anyway.
Because they all kind of look like they're one big thing.
Yeah. It does look like
a solid. I'm sure it's pieces, parts, yeah, but still.
Anyway. Okay. Supposedly, when they pour these fonts, it takes several times. And they pour it, and then they break it all up and start again because they have to get the mixture just right and the mold just right. And so it takes several times. And so the story is everybody was getting very concerned because this contractor was taking his time and getting his mold all set. And everybody, he was just being very meticulous, and he hadn't even poured it once. And people were worried he was going to fall behind schedule. So the story is he goes to do his first pour, and it's perfect. Not a crack, not a uneven, everything is perfect.
It is a miracle.
Yes. So he does his first pour. The font is perfect. Later that night, after the pour.
After the perfect pour.
Yes. He goes into cardiac arrest.
Of course he does.
And goes to the hospital.
It's going into cardiac arrest. He got the perfect pour. That never happens.
Now he's done. So he can. It's okay. So he goes to the hospital, and supposedly in the hospital, he tells his wife, relatives, somebody that there was an amazing spirit in that temple and that he knows he's going to die, I guess, at this point in time. He would like to be baptized in that font that he poured after he passes away.
Oh.
So, it gets better.
It gets better.
So, supposedly, according to this story, he will be the first name baptized in the font of the Meridian Idaho Temple. Now, immediately, I was thinking, there's no way. There's no way. This is like a Holland-esque type of story going around here.
Yes, yes.
Right?
In reference to the kind of outlandish missionary story that Elder Holland told earlier this year that might not have been exactly fact-checked.
It got retracted.
Got retracted.
So I've been waiting to see if somebody, you know, if I hear this from anyone else or if it's said over the pulpit. I haven't heard anything. So
here's how I would like to deconstruct that rumor, being the skeptic that I am. Also, because of my job where people tell me stories all day long, and my job as a lawyer is to deconstruct their story.
Right.
To prove its veracity or lack thereof. The first thing I thought of is, I don't believe that the church is going to hire some local contractor who's never poured a baptismal font before, give him some plans and say, pour some baptismal fonts.
Right.
Because I know a lot of the things that go into temples, like, for example, the stained glass windows. There's a studio around Thanksgiving Point in Utah that does a lot of the stained glass windows for temples. And I think that the church employs a lot of artisans. I mean, you look at the number of temples that are coming online, you know, as soon as Meridian is dedicated, then it's Cedar City. I like to say they're like planes lined up on a runway getting ready to take off.
I'm sure they have a guy for this.
I'm sure they have a guy for this. So, and there's my Oopdoor flight analogy.
Right.
Anyway, I cannot help but think that, I mean, these baptismal fonts to a certain extent are very similar. And definitely if the oxen are part of them, they're very similar.
Right.
That they got a guy for this and that they pour it with somebody who's poured extensively and has done these repeatedly for the church, slap it on a truck and ship it up to Idaho.
Right.
Utah's not that far away.
Plus, here is my other thing. Don't you have to wait a year?
You do.
After you die?
You have to wait a year after you die.
Unless if you give verbal permission. Is there an exception to that rule?
I don't think so.
I've never heard of that happening.
I think that's a hard and fast rule. So that was the other question I had with this story is I'm like, hello. But again, the temple has been under construction for more than a year. So I don't know when the baptismal font was poured.
That's a very good point. But maybe it was the first thing because it was in the basement.
We're just throwing it out there that this faith promoting rumor is going around. We do not believe it in any way, shape, or form. We challenge Twim Nation to prove us wrong.
We would love for someone to prove us wrong.
We would love that. Because
Maybe they'll talk about it at the dedication.
Maybe they'll talk about it at the dedication. Don't worry, folks. In our next episode, we're going to give you a complete rundown of the dedication, along with the youth cultural celebration.
Oh, right. That's the other big
thing. Or, as we like to call it, you may recall when we first discussed the youth cultural celebration, Al and Jeff titled that podcast, We Have a Culture, I'm Sure of It.
I'm sure.
So we call it the youth cultural, We Have a Cultural, I'm Cultural Celebration, I'm Sure of It. Or, as your friend likes to call it,
oh my goodness, I have a friend who calls it Dancing for Jesus.
Dancing for Jesus.
I'm sorry, I think that's so funny.
It really kind of is.
Okay, so it's this Saturday.
It is this Saturday.
Your kids are ready. Your kids are going.
I've got three kids participating in it. It is at the Taco Bell Arena. Yes, Yo Quiero Taco Bell. We have a Taco Bell Arena here in Boise. It is on the BSU, Boise State University campus, and it is akin to the Marriott Center, but does not hold as many people as the Marriott Center. Mm-hmm. So we were waiting for a long time to find out the time of the cultural celebration, because Boise State has a home game that day that is being broadcast on ESPN, and the ESPN hadn't decided what time they were going to broadcast,
right.
So the game time hadn't been set, so the cultural celebration time hadn't been set. But we now know that the game is going to be in the evening, so the cultural celebration will be at 1 in the afternoon. It will be broadcast to all of the stake centers locally so that, because obviously the seating in the Taco Bell Arena is very limited. I will say though, even though I have not managed to score a seat in the temple, I have managed to score a ticket for the youth cultural celebration.
Which is a hot ticket.
It is a hot ticket. And I honestly had not anticipated that I would get a ticket. My husband is going because he is a chaperone. He's in young men's, and so he has to chaperone a group of kids. And they announced in sacrament meeting yesterday, they were talking about the tickets, and they said that it was kind of a one ticket per family sort of a thing. And that if you had a parent who was going as a chaperone, that would kind of be your one ticket. So I just had kind of resigned myself to the fact, well, I'll go to the stake center and watch it, and that's fine. And we had a couple of meetings last night, and I came back from the meeting, and one of my kids said, hey, the Bishop Brick counselor dropped off a ticket for you. And so I managed to get a ticket for the cultural celebration. So I'm kind of excited, since I do have three kids, to get to go see my three kids perform.
Right. Well, it'll be fun.
So
I'm going to go watch at a stake center because I've never seen one of these things.
Yes.
And I got to see it.
Well, and I'm sure that I will be in the nosebleed section, so you may have a better view vantage point at the stake center with the cameras than I do.
Yes. All right. Well, I think that is all things Meridian, Idaho Temple.
All things Meridian, Idaho Temple. So maybe we ought to move on to some news.
Yes. Let's do some news.
Okay. We're going to start with, we need to do an update on Lindsay Sterling.
I know. She's doing so good.
She is doing really well.
I've actually been watching all season. I'm really like hit and miss on Dancing with the Stars. Uh-huh. I've never been a regular, but I'm watching this season because I got to watch Lindsay.
That's right. So a couple of highlights of her season. First of all, so tonight was the semifinals. So spoiler alert, if you DVR'd it, we're going to tell you what happened. So she made it through the semifinals, and she will be in the finals next week, which is very exciting. And some of the highlights of her Dancing on the Stars this season is, first of all, it was only 2 or 3 weeks into her Dancing with the Stars that during her little vignette that they they show before they actually show the dancing, she mentioned that she'd broken up with a guy that she'd been dating for about a year and a half.
Right.
And she was really bummed because she really liked him. And she's at a stage where she was kind of wanting to move to the next stage of her life, you know, being married, being a mom, mm-hmm. having kids. And so she talked about how hard that was. The other thing that's happened is she's lost a ton of weight, and she is a little itty bitty thing to begin right. with. She is not big, and she's been very open about her struggles with anorexia, but anybody who goes on this show, they all lose weight.
Right, they all do.
Because this dancing is just so intense. And so she lost about 8 pounds, and she started to get concerned because she was getting very low, mm-hmm. like where she was with the anorexia. And she said, I just had to be more focused on what I was eating and make sure right. that I was eating. So she was talking about she's trying to get lots of protein. She's eating steaks. She's apparently eating peanut butter by the scoopful.
Well, that sounds divine.
I know. Like, how would it be to have that problem?
Yeah, but she's doing awesome. She's a great dancer, which I think everybody figured she would be. The other guy is so good, too. He's going to be the one to beat. Jordan
Fisher.
Yeah.
Exactly. So the four couples in the final are Drew Scott and Emma Stone, Lindsay Arnold and Jordan Fisher, and Lindsay Arnold is the professional, mm-hmm. Whitney Carson and Frankie Munoz, I think is how his last name is pronounced. And then, of course, Lindsay and Mark Ballas. What is so interesting about this is of the four women dancers, mm-hmm. three of those women dancers are LDS.
Oh, because the two professionals
are. Yes, Lindsay Arnold and Whitney uh-huh. Carson are both LDS. And so...
look at that.
I know. I keep thinking, what's the makeup room got to be like? Are they exchanging casserole recipes? Is poor Emma Stone going, you guys are speaking in Mormon code? I don't know. But, I am rooting for Lindsay Sterling. She's done incredible this year. She did have an injury. But if Lindsay can't win, my second choice is I really want Lindsay Arnold and Jordan Fisher to win.
He's really good.
He's very good. And Lindsay Arnold is a great dancer. Mm-hmm. Whitney Carson has already gotten the mirror ball. Mark Ballas, of course, has gotten the mirror ball. I would really like to see Lindsay Arnold and Jordan Fisher
she's
win.
She's never had it.
She's never had the mirror ball. So if it's not going to be Lindsay Sterling, then I want it to be Lindsay Arnold.
Okay.
And not that I don't love Whitney Carson too. So shout out to Whitney. Mm-hmm. Whitney is just cute. But anyway, and if Whitney, there's no losers. Let's just put it that way.
They're all very, very good.
Yes.
All right. Okay. So next story on our list is, this is the shortest story ever, which is slightly disappointing to me because this is a high topic of interest for us. We've discussed the soda shops so many times on here. We're a little obsessed.
We've beaten it to death.
So I know we mentioned several months ago that Sodalicious and Swig were going to court because Swig was suing Sodalicious.
Yes.
Over using the term dirty.
And this was big boy court. This was federal court.
Yes. And so we were anxious to see how that played out because we're kind of team Sodalicious.
We are team Sodalicious.
Because we like them, but also we think it's ridiculous to sue over the name dirty.
Exactly. Especially when it started in the alcohol industry, not the soda industry.
Anyway, so there was a tiny blurb in the news last week about how they have settled. They settled their differences out of court, and they asked the judge to dismiss the trademark case. We have no information. This is my biggest frustration. I wanted them to go to court because I wanted to, see what was going to happen.
I know. Now,
I mean, I didn't want them to go to court, but I just want to know.
No, I wanted them to go to court. Now, I have to say I'm torn over this because as a lawyer, I always encourage settlement. Really, nobody ever wins if you go to court. Even if you win the case in court, you still kind of lose. But I just thought, what a fun trial this would be. I would probably seriously take off work and go down and watch this trial. I mean, that's how engaged I would have been in this. But yes, they settled.
So we have no idea what
we have no idea.
For. All it says is that they each side will pay its own legal costs.
Exactly.
So I'm so curious, did Swig just say, okay, this isn't worth it? We should part ways and just cut our costs?
I think that that's probably what happened is that they are both apparently staying in business.
Right.
So the fact that they are both staying in business indicates that, they probably had some negotiation I would suspect they both get to use the term dirty still, right, because I don't think anybody can necessarily claim that as a trademark. But there may be a few other things in the settlement that maybe So Delicious cannot do,
okay,
that Swig did. And, of course, the settlements are always confidential, so folks,
we'll never know.
We'll never know. We'll just be left wondering. But at least the great Utah legal soda battle has been put to bed.
That's right. Everybody can be friends and drink their sodas from whatever shop they want to.
Exactly. Exactly.
So funny.
All right. So our next story in the news is the church, of course, likes to prepare its missionaries in advance. And I, of course, have a son who's working on getting his papers in right now. And so they have a section on their website called Prepare to Serve. And on this section on their website that they have entitled Prepare to Serve, they have a video that is 7.5 minutes long and talks about 99 peculiar foods that returned missionaries ate while serving in their missions.
This video is done by the church?
It's done by the church.
Oh, I saw the headline. I didn't realize it was like a church PSA on mission.
Oh, yes.
My goodness.
It's churchy. And so they interview all of these different missionaries, and these missionaries start listing off things that they've eaten, like caterpillars, jellyfish tentacles, grasshopper tacos, fried ant eggs, silkworm larvae, pumpkin leaves, fish intestine, rats, termites, tarantulas, whale steak, and reindeer meat.
Okay, seriously, if I were thinking about going on a mission and I watched this video, it might scare me. But I'm kind of a wimp when it comes to stuff like that.
Well, you and me both. And granted, I mean, these are, I mean, you look at it, it's kind of mind-blowing that people eat these foods, but that's just because they're not common in our
right.
culture. In other culture, these are very common foods. And as missionaries, they are, of course, to immerse themselves in the culture. And my husband, Darren, served in Australia, and he said on more than one occasion, he has a distinct memory of looking over at his companion, who was relatively new and who looked down at the food, and the companion was like, I'm not going to eat this. And Darren was like, put it in your mouth and swallow. And you just had to put it in your mouth and swallow and realize that these people were giving you the best of what they had and to be thankful for it. But for me, what it made me thankful for was I thought, I am so glad that I'm a girl and I was never commanded to serve a mission. That it was optional for me and that I got to skip the gross food.
Oh, man.
All right.
Rough.
It is a very interesting video, so and entertaining. So go watch it.
Okay. So next story, this was actually a story by Newsweek about Elizabeth Smart. Elizabeth Smart, I think, is all over the news the past couple weeks because, of course, she has her movie coming out that she collaborated with on Lifetime.
Yes.
I think it comes out this Saturday.
And I think it's called I Am Elizabeth Smart,
yeah.
I think is what it's called.
Yeah, I think so. So she's been all over doing press and things like that. Well, Newsweek printed a story on her last week, and people are raging mad about the headline. It is not a good headline.
Yeah, headline writer fail.
Yeah, major fail. So the headline, the title of this article is Elizabeth Smart, Who Changed Mormons' Views on Sex, is Wary of Religion. So, and then when you read the article, that's not what it says at all.
She's not wary of religion.
So the very first line in the article says, Elizabeth Smart, a Mormon girl who survived a horrific and highly publicized abduction, is wary of people who use religion to justify their actions.
Now,
hello. Amazing what happens if you leave a word out.
Exactly. And I would say she's justified in being wary of people who use religion to justify actions that are morally bankrupt.
Right, right. So the article itself was not bad. It was just the headline that people were super upset about. They just talked about her story and how she has been, you know, trying to help and educate people and parents on, she says, you know, make sure that your child understands that no one has a right to hurt them or scare them. And, you know, she's been advocating for many years for these kinds of things. And then it does have a blurb in the end. It says, nevertheless, Smart has very publicly criticized the church's promotion of virginity and spoken out in defense of rape victims. And it has a quote from her where she talks about the power of faith and healing, the amazing yes. healing that it can bring to people. And then she also says there's another side of it that can be potentially harmful when religions teach that sexual relations are meant for marriage, and it's so stressed that girls tie their worth to yes. virginity, which she has been very,
yes.
very vocal on.
Well, and I don't think she has a problem with sexual no. relations being meant for marriage. Her problem,
right.
and quite honestly, I agree with her, is the lessons on the licked cupcake.
Yeah, totally.
Or the used gum.
Yeah, and I do think that she has done very, very good things for the church.
I do.
In showing how harmful that can be.
Yes.
Because I think we're coming around.
Exactly.
On those chastity lessons that are super, super guilt
ridden. Exactly. Yeah. And I don't think, I mean, it's obviously never been in church curriculum.
No.
The licked, you know, the licked cupcake or the chewed gum. People have just taken that as kind of, you know, somebody uses it and somebody else right. thinks it's a good idea.
It's an
and it
object
gets,
lesson.
Object lesson. Yeah. It gets passed around. But the message of that being that once that object is destroyed, it can never be brought back, which runs contrary, of course, to the atonement. Mm-hmm. That, you know, if for whatever reason a young girl ended up with a moral transgression, with a sin, that is exactly what the atonement is for, is to be able to make her whole again should she take advantage of the atonement. And that's what Elizabeth has been trying to push, is that let's not forget the role that the atonement plays, and that you are not your sin.
Right. Yes. So, okay on the article, fail on the headline Newsweek. Yes.
All right. So our next one is entitled, Mormon Apostle Reorganizes Louisiana Stake He Once Dissolved. And so this was Elder Todd Christofferson. And, you know, we've had a lot in the news lately with the natural disasters, with Hurricane Harvey, and we had Irma, and just kind of the Caribbean and the Gulf Coast region really got hit hard earlier this fall with all of those natural disasters. And so 10 years ago, there was Katrina.
Right.
And many of us remember Katrina and how Katrina just literally wiped out New Orleans, so to speak.
Right.
And the flooding and everything that ensued in New Orleans as a result of Katrina. Well, when Katrina occurred, there were thousands of people who were evacuated from New Orleans, and many of those people never returned to New Orleans. They stayed away. So as a result of that, the church had to take what had been kind of several stakes and dissolve some things. And one of the stakes that was dissolved was the Sidel, Louisiana stake. And those members were reassigned to different stakes because they just didn't have the population to be able to support that.
So interesting. I never even knew that happened, but it makes sense.
It does make sense. And so Elder Christofferson had been down there. He was not Elder Christofferson at the time. I believe he was an area authority or a 70, and he had gone down there and to dissolve the stake, so to speak. And he said, you know, when he was down there in 2007, that, you know, everyone understood the need to make the change. There was no opposition, but it was sad that it had to happen.
Right.
And you can imagine that, yes, that was sad. So fast forward 10 years later, they send Elder D. Todd back down to Louisiana, and he was delighted to reorganize the Sidel, Louisiana stake. And he said, I told the congregation that since I had been the one to assign to dissolve the stake, they were now allowing me to repent and come back and recreate it. He said with a smile, I hope I am forgiven.
That's cool.
Which I thought was really cool. And then, of course, he goes on to talk about it. He says that he did not prophesy during his first visit when he dissolved the Sidel stake that one day it would be created, but he did tell the saints at that time. He said, I did say that the church in this region would stabilize and grow again. Mm-hmm. And the new stake president of the Sidel, Louisiana stake, remembered when the stake was dissolved. Mm-hmm. And he says, I had a strong feeling then that the Sidel stake would one day be reorganized. I had hope because I saw how the saints were rallying. And then Elder Christofferson goes on to say, time, humility, and faith have allowed Katrina's wounds of afflictions to heal. The church goes forward and the members go forward. Oftentimes, only hindsight reveals how far you have come.
Right.
And I thought, what an amazing message, especially in light of all of the natural disasters, mm-hmm. to give hope to those people in Houston. To get, and Houston, I think, will be fine. It's more the people in the Caribbean, mm-hmm. in those islands like Puerto Rico, that have just been so devastated and are not coming back quickly. To give them hope that in 10 years, you know, what they're seeing now will be very different.
Right. So. Yeah, that's a good story. Good story. Okay, next story is about a family from Arizona that is setting out to visit every LDS temple in the world in 2 years. Can you imagine?
Okay. I cannot.
This is a huge undertaking.
Okay. And there's how many LDS temples do we have online right now?
I think Meridian's going to be 158.
I thought it was more than that.
No.
Is Meridian 158?
I think it's 158. Okay. I thought that's what I heard. We'll have to double check this.
We'll double check. In any event, I think it's safe to say that it's at least in the 160 region.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. For sure. And by the time 2 years, they'll just keep adding to the list. All right.
It's like I said, the temples are like planes on a runway getting ready for launch.
So true.
So then that begs the question, do you have to then go back to the new temples?
Right.
That have been added.
Or are you going to stick to the original list?
I don't
know.
Okay.
I don't know.
Go on to the story.
So this family from Arizona, they're the Alcantar family. They have 5 children. And one of their children is grown, but the other 4 children are ages 2 to 10. And right now they are 3 months into their 2-year adventure. And they have so far visited 19 temples in the first 3 months.
Wow.
So what they did
I'm assuming they've been hitting the Intermountain West, where the temples are all conveniently. Well,
they've been to D.C. I don't know where else they've been. There's a map online you can follow. They also have a blog you can follow.
Well, of course they have a blog.
So, of course, the question they get the most is, how are you financing this? So I guess the dad, Sal, who is the dad, he's an entrepreneur and a stakeholder in like a variety of businesses. So he said he was in a meeting one day and he realized that his business partners were kind of running the show and they didn't need him. So he says, as soon as that realization hit him, he stopped the meeting and said, guys, I think I'm retiring today.
How would that be?
Oh my goodness. So
how would that be?
I know. And he recognizes that they're lucky and that financially they've been able to do this. So they downsized. They had a 5,000 square foot home.
Okay.
They downsized to a 31 foot long RV and headed out on this adventure.
Okay.
So they said there was, you know, some growing pains in the RV. They had to get used to RV life. The first few weeks were rough, as you can imagine.
I can only imagine.
With 4 kids in an RV.
Well, and I think they said they brought way too much stuff.
Yeah, they brought too much. So they had to get rid of some of their stuff and get used to living with less. And then it says they have certain goals when everywhere they visit. One is to visit every temple. And I'm not just talking picture outside. The rule is that they must actually do an ordinance in the temple. So this was blowing my mind. So I figure, okay, they tag team. And the article said, they tag team. And the other parent sits in the lobby or the visitor center with the children and reads Friend and Ensign articles.
Oh, get out of town. Oh,
that is dedication.
Oh my gosh. So that begs the question. Do you have to do an endowment session, which your kids are going to be sitting there for a good 2.5 hours, depending on your temple and the size? Or do you just go in and go, I need one ceiling. I need one initiatory.
Give me
something quick.
Just one name.
Or better yet, do you go to the baptistry? Dunk me once. Get me out.
It probably depends on the temple. If you're going to D.C., you probably want to see the full thing. If you're coming to Boise, you're probably like, one's good.
One and done.
So there are other goals that they have at everywhere they go is they want to serve in every state. They want to do a bit of service. They want to share the gospel. They've got Book of Mormons all over. And then making memories. They're also hitting church history sites and things on this tour. But one of the most interesting things I thought about the article was that they have met other young families on the road that are doing the same thing. I was like, what? This is the thing?
Really?
So, because he says in the article that they know that they've been blessed financially, but they have met other families that have different financial situations and they're making it work. He says some families lease or sell their homes or use savings to fund their travels. He talks about how he feels like anybody could make this work if they wanted to. Your expenses are about the same. Your food.
Yeah.
It's your just a matter not gonna of
change.
Yeah. You got to have the income to pay for it. Anyway, very interesting. I'm curious how many families are out there doing this.
I love my family, but that might be a little too much togetherness for me.
I know.
I need my space.
I know. Let's see if they're still an eternal family after 2 years of that. Huh?
That's right.
But good luck to them. We wish them luck.
We do. We wish them luck. And it might be it's probably pretty interesting to read their blog and follow along.
Yeah. I'd like to get on their blog and check it out. Yes. I'm sure they have all kinds of stories. So.
Okay. That leads us to Q-Nor.
Oh, you love this one. This is your favorite thing you've seen all week.
So, for those of you who don't know, Q-Nor is a company that they do LDS temple dresses.
See, I didn't know that. So, this is good publicity.
Yes.
This is
good publicity. And they have, you know, kind of some different styles. They really have beautiful stuff. And so, apparently, the owner of Q-Nor is a huge Taylor Swift fan. So, in honor of Taylor Swift's new album dropping this last weekend, they superimposed the face of Taylor Swift on one of their temple dresses, threw it up on Instagram, and said, okay, put it out there. Rewrite a Taylor Swift song or take a lyric from a Taylor Swift song and tie it to a gospel principle, and we're going to pick a winner, and they're going to get a $100 gift card to Q-Nor.
Right.
So there are literally hundreds of comments.
Oh, there's so many. People just have to get online.
They are hilarious, to say the least. So we picked some of our favorites that we're going to read, and we just encourage everybody to go online if you want to be entertained. It really helps, though, to be a Taylor Swift fan. You've got to know her songs to really kind of understand and appreciate a lot of the comments.
I think they better be careful, though, because doesn't Taylor Swift have a reputation for, like, she will sue you? I think Q-Nor better watch out. That's just my opinion.
Well, again, you know, I suppose if you were doing it to make money, they're not per se making money other than like advertising. And they are plugging her new album.
That's true.
Because they're doing this.
She's getting a lot of publicity.
In honor of her new album.
So, let's see. There were some funny ones. This one person said, I go on too many dates, but I can't make him stay. Memoir of a Single Sword. I thought that was funny.
Then says, looking at the empty space next to mine in Family Search, I've got a blank space, baby, and I'll write your name in.
Yes. And I think our favorite one of
this is our favorite
one. I knew you were trouble when you walked in, the way the nursery leader looks at my son as he runs to class. That one was good.
That one was by far my favorite.
There are seriously hundreds, so if you need a good laugh, and if you love Taylor Swift, get online, check it out.
Okay.
All right, should we do favorite things?
Let's do favorite things.
Okay. Should I go first?
You go first.
All right, my favorite thing this week is, I think other people have probably heard of it. I might be late to the game on this one, but it's called MoviePass. Had you heard of this?
No.
Have I told you about this?
I think you had discussed, you had talked about it, but you didn't know if it actually worked.
Right. No, we now have our movie pass.
Okay, so explain this.
So we had a friend visit a couple months ago from Oregon, and he whips out this little card, and he says, have you guys got a movie pass? And we said, no. So it is a membership thing. You pay $10 a month, and you can go to unlimited movies, but only one within 24 hours. Unlimited
movies.
New release movies. There's no limitations. Can be new releases, maybe not 3D. That might be a limitation.
Okay.
But new releases, it works at almost every movie theater because we double checked all our theaters here to make sure it would work.
Okay.
So $10 a month, you can see unlimited movies, one every 24 hours.
Wow. So you have to have one and then your husband has to have one.
You each have to have your own. So we did $10 a month for me and $10 for him. And we're not huge movie people, especially now that we have kids. That's really...
Yeah.
We go see a lot less movies now.
Exactly.
But my husband likes to go... He'll just go see a lot on his own.
Yeah.
And so we thought, well, I'll get one too for over the holidays. Because when the holidays is when all the movies come out that you want to see. And the other great thing, you can cancel it anytime. It's not like a contract thing. So after the holidays, I'll probably cancel mine.
So is it transferable that if Keith wanted to take a buddy to the movie, he could...
use mine.
Use yours.
He could. Well, the thing is... Here's how it works. When you get to the theater, you have an app on your phone.
Okay.
You have to check in with the app on your phone when you get to the theater. So that is one catch.
Oh, okay.
Because if you're going to something super popular,
yeah.
it might sell out before you get to the theater.
Okay.
So he could take a buddy if the buddy took my phone and checked in on my phone, probably.
Yeah, but you probably wouldn't want the buddy having your phone.
not super convenient.
Okay.
So you have to check in on your phone when you get to the theater. And then you go inside and you just show them your little card and you get right in. Isn't that crazy?
That is crazy.
I cannot figure out how they're going to make money on this. But I'm just going to go with it until they go out of business, you know, like VidAngel. We're just going to ride this wave until
it crashes. Even if you saw one movie a month, that pays for your movie pass.
Oh, yeah, because it's
easy.
$9 a ticket at
exactly.
least, right?
Exactly.
So, okay. Yeah, so I don't know what the business plan is or how they're making money, but I'm just not going to question it. I'm just going to enjoy it while I can.
Okay. So, seems fair to me.
I will warn you, it takes time to get your card. When we signed up, it probably took about a month for our card to come in the mail.
Okay.
So you got to do it in advance.
So if you want to see those holiday movies, you better be getting on that right now.
Yeah, you better sign up now because I think they're a little backed up right now because everybody's signing up.
Okay.
So.
All right.
Movie pass.
Okay, so my favorite thing is a podcast that I listened to last week.
Ooh, I love a good podcast.
I know. So many of you know, friend of Twim Nation is Kurt Frankum over at Leading LDS.
Right.
And he had a podcast where he interviewed Elder John Groberg.
Oh.
And this is the 70 that they based the movie The Other Side of Heaven on. Mm-hmm. And in this interview, he doesn't spend a lot of time talking about his mission life there in Samoa as a young missionary, but he talks about, you know, what happened to him when he came back from his mission and various leadership positions. And he was called back to Samoa as a mission president.
Oh.
And the story of how he got called as a mission president back to Samoa Tonga is where he was. Excuse me. Sorry about that. The story of how he gets called back to Tonga as a mission president is mind-blowing. It is so different from how they do it today.
Oh, that really?
You just have to... I'm not going to be a spoiler because I want people to go listen to it. And then he talks about being called as a 70 and he talks about how he would lead as a 70 and he talks about spiritual experiences he had as a 70 and his interaction with a lot of the brethren. It was about an hour and it was so fascinating. So I am just encouraging everybody to head on over to Leading LDS and listen to the podcast that Kurt Frankum did with Elder John Groberg because it was outstanding. It was very worth your time, super spiritually uplifting.
Okay, that sounds good.
Okay.
I'll have to go listen.
All right.
Okay, I think that does it for this week and we will sign off here. We want to encourage you all to go check out the TWIM website.
Exactly.
Connect with TWIM on Facebook and Instagram. And we have our own TWIM Sisters account on Instagram. If you look us up under TWIM Sisters. We'd love to connect with you.
And we cannot forget Patreon.
All right. We have to do a plug for Patreon.
If you want to support this podcast, you can go on to Patreon for $1 a month. You can be a supporter of all things TWIM. So we would definitely encourage you to do that.
All right. Thanks for listening. We appreciate it.
And happy holidays.